the individual responsible, and any time bombs they've left, and there's a small matter of evidence. A thought strikes her. What happens when you catch them? Andy looks at me, and my blood runs cold. I think we'll have to see about that when we find them, I extemporize, trying to avoid telling her about the audit commission for the time being. She might blow her stack completely if I have to explain how they investigate malfeasance, and then I'd have to tell her that the burning smell is a foreshadowing of what happens if she is ever found guilty of disloyalty. It normally fades a few minutes after the rite of binding, but right now it's still strong. What are we waiting for? I ask. Let's go. In the beginning, there was the Defense Evaluation and Research Agency, DERA. And DERA was where HMG's boffins hung out, and they developed cool toys like tanks with plastic armor, clunky palm tops powered by 1980s chips, and rugged enough to be run over by a truck, and fetal heart monitors to help the next generation of squaddies grow up strong. And lo, in the thrusting entrepreneurial climate of the early 90s, a new government came to power with a remit to bring about the triumph of true socialism by privatizing the post office and air traffic control systems, and DERA didn't stand much of a chance. Renamed Kinetic by the same nameless marketing genius who turned the Royal Mail into Consignia and Virgin Trains into fodder for fuckedcompany.com, the research agency was hung out to dry, primped and beautified, and generally prepared for sale to the highest bidder who didn't speak with a pronounced Iraqi accent. However, in addition to the ordinary toys, DERA used to do development work for the laundry. Q Division's pedigree stretches back all the way to SOE's wartime dirty tricks department. Poison pens, boot heel escape kits, explosive stuffed sabotage rats, the whole nine yards of James Bond japery. Since the 1950s, Q Division has kept the laundry in more esoteric equipment, summoning grids, basilisk guns, Turing oracles, self-tuning pentacles, self-filling beer glasses, and the like. Steadily growing weirder and more specialized by the year, Q Division is far too sensitive to sell off. Unlike most of Kinetic's research, what they do is classified so deep you'd need a bathyscaph to reach it. And so, while Kinetic was being doled up for the city catwalk, Q Division was segregated and spun off, a little stronghold in the sea of commerce that is forever civil service territory. Detective Inspector Sullivan marches out of the site office like a blank-faced automaton, and crisply orders her pet driver to take us to Site Able, then to bugger off on some obscure make-work errand. She sits stiffly in the front passenger seat, while Andy and I slide into the back and we proceed in silence. Nobody seems to want to make small talk. 15 minutes of bumbling around red routes and through trackless wastes of identical red brick houses embellished with satellite dishes and raw pine fences brings us into an older part of town, where the buildings actually look different, and the cycle paths are painted strips at the side of the road, rather than separately planned routes. I glance around curiously, trying to spot landmarks. "Aren't we near Bletchley Park?" I ask.
"It's a couple of miles that way,"
says our driver without taking his hands off the wheel to point.
"You thinking of visiting?"
"Not just yet." Bletchley Park was the wartime headquarters of the Ultra Operation, the department that later became GCHQ. The people who built the Colossus computers, originally used for breaking Nazi codes, and subsequently diverted by the laundry for more occult purposes. Hallowed ground to us spooks. I've met more than one NSA liaison who wanted to visit in order to smuggle a boot heel full of gravel home. Not until we've visited the UK offices of Dillinger Associates, at any rate. Dillinger Associates is the cover name for a satellite office of Q Division. The premises turns out to be a neoclassical brick-and-glass edifice with twee fake columns and wilted-looking ivy that's been trained to climb the facade by dint of ruthless application of plant hormones. We pile out of the car in the courtyard between the dry fountain and the glass doors, and I surreptitiously check my PDA's locator module for any sign of a match. Nothing. I blink and put it away in time to catch up with Andy and Josephine as they head for the bleached blonde receptionist who sits behind a high wooden counter and types constantly, as unapproachably artificial-looking as a shop window dummy.
Hello, Dillinger Associates, how can I help you?
She flutters her eyelids at Andy in a bored, professional way, hands never moving away from the keyboard of the PC in front of her. There's something odd about her, but I can't quite put my finger on it. Andy flips open his warrant card.
We're here to see Dr. Voss.
The receptionist's long, red-nailed fingers stop moving and hover over the keyboard.
Really?
She asks tonelessly, reaching under the desk.
Hold it,
I begin to say, as Josephine takes a brisk step forward and drops a handkerchief over the webcam on top of the woman's monitor. There's a quiet pop, and the sudden absence of noise from her PC tips me off. I sidestep the desk and make a grab for her, just as Andy produces a pistol with a ridiculously fat barrel and shoots out the camera located over the door at the rear of the reception area. There's a horrible ripping sound, like a joint of meat tearing apart, as the receptionist twists aside, and I realize that she isn't sitting on a chair at all. She's joined seamlessly at the hips to a plinth that emerges from some kind of fat swivel base of age-blackened wood, bolted to the floor with heavy brass pins, in the middle of a silvery metallic pentacle with wires trailing from one corner back up to the PC on the desk. She opens her mouth, and I can see that her tongue is bright blue and bifurcated as she hisses. I hit the floor shoulder first, jarringly hard, and grab for the nearest cable. Those red nails are reaching down for me as her eyes narrow to slits, and she works her jaw muscles as if she's trying to get together a wad of phlegm to spit. I grab the fattest cable and give it a pull, and she screams, high-pitched and frighteningly inhuman. What the fuck? I think, looking up as the red-painted claws stretch and expand, shedding layers of varnish as their edges grow long and sharp. Then I yank the cable again, and it comes away from the pentacle. The wooden box drools a thick, blue-tinted liquid across the carpet tiles, and the screaming stops.
Lamia,
Andy says tersely. He strides over to the fire door that opens onto the corridor beyond, raises the curiously fat gun, and fires straight up. A purple rain drizzles back down.
What's going on?
Says Josephine, bewildered, staring at the twitching, slowly dying receptionist. I point my PDA at the Lamia and ding it for a reading. Cool, but non-zero.
Got a partial fix, I call to Andy.
Where's everyone else? Isn't this place supposed to be manned?
No idea.
He looks worried.